Mr. Jay Sekulow, reports are it's down to three potential nominees to the Supreme Court.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
The president has wrapped up the interview process, and days from now, he is set to announce his nomination to the highest court in the land.
Judge Raymond Kethledge's stock is rising. He is an appellate judge from the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. He's described as a strict constitutionalist, also still in the running. He is Brett Kavanaugh from the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. He is said to be most in the mold of Neil Gorsuch, who was appointed last year.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
Judge Amy Coney Barrett still in the running. I'm told that the president would like to appoint a woman and that nominating her would likely put Democrats like Joe Manchin, Joe Donnelly, and Heidi Heitkamp in a box that they would find very difficult to vote against a woman. So she is still a possibility.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Well, and then they were three, or at least that's what the reports are, and the three being Amy Barrett, Judge Brett Kavanaugh. So again, Judge Amy Barrett, Judge Brett Kavanaugh, Judge Raymond Kethledge. Having said that, we're going to talk this first segment. We're taking your calls, first of all. Here's what we want to know from you. How important is a Supreme Court nominee to you? And what issues are the ones that you are most concerned with? And we'll take your calls at 1-800-684-3110. 800-684-3110. Now, we played for you in the beginning of this broadcast kind of a montage of what the reporters are saying. Let me give you an assessment from someone that's been inside the process in the past under previous administrations. And while it is probable that, and again, I don't have any particular knowledge of the who's leading the pack and who's not leading the pack, the names you hear are Barrett, Kavanaugh, and Kethledge. Having said that, I will tell you that in the past, on Supreme Court nominees, in the last 24 to 48 hours, things can change. So you could think the leading candidate is one particular nominee, and you end up, it becomes somebody else. Information's gathered, different things might happen. So again, for you to understand the process, the president, reports are the president has done interviewing, which means he's probably reduced it to two or three nominees. Last week, they were even reporting at the, Tuesday before the holiday, they're reporting on that Amy Barrett and Brett Kavanaugh were the leading contenders, and then Raymond Kethledge also was mentioned. So those are the three that it seems to be coming down to. But let's talk process here for a moment. First of all, a Supreme Court nominee is going to be, Jordan, a political fight, no matter who the nominee is.
That's right. It always is a political fight. It doesn't matter what the makeup of the U.S. Senate is. The only difference now is that we no longer have a supermajority necessary or a filibuster. So because of that, you only need 51 votes to be confirmed. And right now, the margin, if John McCain, Senator McCain, is not in Washington, is 50-49. So again, a very slim margin. The vice president can vote. So, I mean, there's an added vote there. What you have to make sure, number one, and I think this would be a lot easier if you were talking about Democrats, but not always with Republicans, just to be honest, is that if you can keep every Republican together, whoever President Trump nominates will be confirmed easily, slimly, but yep. Easily. But Republicans are not as easy to keep together as Democrats. They never have been historically.
All right, so Than, let's talk about process for our viewers, because I think this is important to understand. There will be an announcement on, primetime announcement is the plan, from what I understand, on Monday night. That'll be the announcement of the nominee. If that is in fact the case, then what happens immediately thereafter on your end on the Capitol Hill and government affairs?
Yeah, Jay, as soon as that nomination is made, it will be sent immediately to the Senate Judiciary Committee. They are right now, as we speak, preparing a questionnaire that will go out to that nominee. They'll be looking for voluminous amounts of information, Jay, legal writings, rulings, academic records, biographical information. They will gather that over a period of about a month. And then there will be a vigorous set of meetings on the Hill between the nominee and senators leading up to an eventual committee hearing, Jay.
All right, so we are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. We're going to try to get through some of the clutter about all this, and we'll walk you through this process and tell you what the likely nominees will be or what their positions are. So we'll take your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. Also, let me encourage you to support the work of the ACLJ. We're in that matching challenge campaign, ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. Got a lot to talk about. I know most of these judges. Appeared before a lot of them, know a lot of them well. 1-800-684-3110 if you want to speak to us on air. If you want to support the work of the ACLJ, ACLJ.org.
The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. As you know, Pastor Andrew is facing charges of, quote, Christianization, on trial for simply living out his Christian faith. He could spend the rest of his life in a Turkish prison. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're aggressively advocating for Pastor Andrew's freedom. We've mobilized our international offices. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved, and we've submitted a critical legal document to the United Nations. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast. We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. C.C. Howell, Senior Counsel for the ACLJ, just walked in. Here's the process that we want to go quickly over. The president will make the announcement Monday night. That next morning, they will start having meetings on Capitol Hill with the nominee to the Supreme Court. Judiciary Committee will then set up hearings. Do we have any sense of when those hearings will take place yet, Dan? Do we know?
There hasn't been an announcement, Jay, but if it follows the Gorsuch timeline, you're looking at mid to late August. I think that final week of August, the week of August 27th, is probably a reasonable guess, Jay. That would fit in the standard timeline. By the way, they could go sooner than that. There's nothing saying they couldn't, but I think that's a reasonable place to guess.
All right, so they're talking about three nominees right now, making kind of the final list here, and that is Judge Barrett. That's Amy Barrett, Judge Brett Kavanaugh, and Judge Raymond Ketledge. Brett Kavanaugh, I've known for a long time. Going all the way back to his days with President Bush. We've also had cases in front of Judge Kavanaugh, including an ACE Affordable Care Act case that we had, and I will tell you a little bit about that one because that's getting some attention. Amy Barrett, I've not appeared before. She's just recent on the Seventh Circuit, but I'm very familiar with her writings, similar with Judge Ketledge actually had, CC, the companion case for the Tea Party cases, correct?
He did.
They were before him in the Court of Appeals?
That's correct.
Yeah.
And he ruled that you know, there was discrimination against the Tea Party.
Yeah. So I'm happy with all these nominees, frankly. You know, I think the issue that you have here is, and Jordan, you said this is, and this is a question we're asking our audience, and I think you said it during the Periscope and Facebook break, but I think it's important to set it out again. Yeah. And we want people to comment about this, too.
Yeah, I really do. I want people to let us know, are they confident in President Trump's ability to make this final decision, because he's done it once before. I think people were very happy with Neil Gorsuch. They learned a lot about him. And again, this is something that we kind of, Americans, and we pay a lot more attention to at ACLJ and you as listeners, but Americans in general kind of pay attention to it and then forget about it until a case comes out that they actually care about it. And sometimes that can be years in between Supreme Court terms. This year, there were three right at the end that were pretty a big deal. It goes ups and downs. But do you feel confident in President Trump's final decision based off the 25-person list, based off these final names you're hearing, based off what you've learned? I know a lot of you are watching cable news. You're getting your news sources. You're listening to talk radio. Do you feel confident? And I want to hear from you, 1-800-684-3110. Is there anybody you're concerned about? I mean, are there names you've heard that you're concerned about? 1-800-684-3110.
Let me say this also, that at the end of the day, this is how the process works. The president got a list, obtained a list of 25 that his White House counsel's office and the Federalist Society, Heritage Foundation, others, I'll say it that way, weighed in on potential nominees. But there are other groups that weighed in on that. But at the end of the day, let me tell you what, while the, of course, the White House counsel has a big influence on this, but let me tell you who has to make the decision, the president of the United States. So President Trump has to make the decision because you own that Supreme Court decision, the nominee. That's your nominee. And they're not going to say it's the White House counsel's nominee. They're not going to say it's the Federal Society's nominee. They're not going to say it's Jay Sekulow's nominee. They're going to say it is the President of the United States nominee. And that's because that's fact. I mean, that is a fact. So when you look at this, that's what you have to be thinking about. Now, we had an interesting question that came in, and that is, are these nominees strict constructionists? So this is goes to their judicial philosophy, which is, by the way, that's from Andrew. That is precisely the question we should be asking. And how do you define a strict constructionalist? An originalist, a textualist, someone who looks at the document itself, does not believe the document's a living document that you change on a whim. If you want to change the document, you can. It's called a constitutional amendment process. So we like originalists, textualists. We like people that respect the separation of powers. Those are the kind of things, CeCe, we look for in a judicial nominee.
Absolutely. And that really is the key. Are they going to follow the Constitution, or are they going to follow their political sway and their personal opinions or emotions? We want someone who is dedicated to following the Constitution.
Agnes writes on Facebook that she's happy with any of the people on the short list. The question, though, I guess becomes, I'll go to Jordan first, then Than. That's great. I'm happy with them, too. The question is, can you get them through Congress, the Senate?
Yeah, I mean, that's right. I mean, so you've got 25 on the short list. You've gotten that short list has been, if we were believe the media reports and what's out there, has been limited down to 5 or even 3 at this point. It all comes down to Senate confirmation. And obviously the president has to make that kind of decision as well. There have been, nominees in the past that have been extremely controversial. Neil Gorsuch was not one of those, except for this. He would not have been confirmed if there was a filibuster. Neil Gorsuch would have been voted down by the U.S. Senate if the filibuster still existed. And any one of these nominees would also, any one of these 25, if there was still a filibuster, not one of these would get through. You'd have to pick a very consensus, very moderate nominee to move through. We don't have that anymore, so we're in a very different situation in post since Neil Gorsuch moving forward, so long as Republicans control the Senate. Yep. It changes everything, and so I think that's why you can be confident that the people on that 25 list, most of them would be able to get through with the new rules.
So, Than, walk us through exactly the process that will happen. Once the nominee's named, once they've had their meetings, then a Judiciary Committee meeting, how do you see the Senate lining up, let's say, if it's Amy Barrett or Brett Kavanaugh, for that matter, Raymond Ketledge?
Yeah, sure. You're going to have those hearings in the Senate Judiciary Committee. And, Jay, I think in those hearings, you'll hear sort of the far-left attack on these nominees. Because if you look at the makeup of that committee, you don't have any of those Senate Democrats that are up for re-election in Trump states. So instead, you have, you know, Democrats that are vying for a presidential nomination, people like Cory Booker and Kamala Harris. So that will be a fight, Jordan. Jay, that will be an intense 4 days of hearings, 2.5 of which the nominee will have to appear for. But ultimately, I go back to what Jordan was talking about. When this reaches the Senate floor, the reason I think any of the names that we've been talking about will eventually get nominated is because so many of those Senate Democrats have to go back to a constituency that the polling after their election showed that Donald Trump was chosen specifically for this reason, to pick the nominee. And by the way, the Republican Senate was picked for the same reason. So, Jay, you want to talk about the politics involved in something this, even in sort of a worst case scenario for a nominee, if they could not get the votes, these senators are going to have to go back to the ballot box a mere 6 weeks later. There's nothing saying that the Senate couldn't wait for the results of those elections and then try again. So ultimately, I think any of the names you're talking about would get through this Senate.
Sue is calling in from Washington State on line one. Sue, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Sue.
Oh, thank you, and thank you for your work.
Thanks.
Okay, my question is why we have let the liberals define all the terms. I think there needs to be a better definition of abortion. I was a feminist pro-choice when it was passed, and I got saved at 33, and through Frances Schaeffer's book, I really started looking at the issue. As I read about it in the 80s, I read something that said, in the language of the decision, the judges said they didn't know when life begins. So I don't know if you know if that's true.
Well, no, I mean, the decision in Roe was based on a very flawed constitutional analysis. They found a right to abortion out of a right to privacy. The right to abortion, of course, nowhere spelled out in the Constitution. And it was called from the penumbras of the Constitution, kind of the overwhelming thoughts of the Constitution. And by the way, liberal academics have criticized C.C. Roe versus Wade. But what you're saying is terminology. And I think we want to know, when you look at terminology in a Supreme Court pick, we want to know, C.C., how that judge views their role as a judge and how they view the Constitution in that context.
Yeah, and you know, Sue's definitely right. You never let the enemy define the argument, because then you're on the defense. So, you know, the issue with abortion, we don't let the left define that. It is killing a baby and when life begins. Those are things that we know, absolutely. So you want someone on the court that will hold to the Constitution and that will, you know, take these issues and decide them correctly.
Yeah, I think that's I think the Cece's right that you have to understand what's at stake. Now, again, let me tell you what Roe versus Wade, because I know this is coming up, and this goes to the Chuck Schumer today. I am celebrating. This was on July 4th. The freedom of women to make their own health care decisions is established by Roe versus Wade. Today, I'm celebrating America's choose. They can decide who they're going to marry. This is kind of his July 4th. This is all a prelude to the Supreme Court fight. I mean, that's what it is. Wherever you are in these issues, the fact is the sides are coming out. But none of those questions are really the questions you want to ask. The real question you want to ask is, how does that judge view the Constitution? How do they view their role as a judge? That is the critical part. But Than, quickly, you believe that any of these finalists, the reported finalists, we don't know if that's the case, would be confirmed.
I really do, Jay, because the swing votes, the votes that matter in the United States Senate, have been silent on this so far. They're waiting for a nominee. The ones that who have come out in advance and say they will oppose it, they are running in states like New York and California that don't have to go to the ballot box or weren't in risk of those Senate seats as well. Jay, the ones that have to go back to the people, they're staying silent so far. I think you're going to get upper 50s for anybody on this list.
I think President Trump's got a lot of support from his base as well. And then if it comes from one of the 25, I think for the most part, people will hear things about these nominees, but they're going to be excited about any of those 25, even though it's been probably narrowed down from that list.
Yep. All right, we'll take your calls when we come back. 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. As you know, Pastor Andrew is facing charges of, quote, Christianization, on trial for simply living out his Christian faith. He could spend the rest of his life in a Turkish prison. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're aggressively advocating for Pastor Andrew's freedom. We've mobilized our international offices. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved, and we've submitted a critical legal document to the United Nations. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at aclj.org.
great July 4th. Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. Taking your calls at 800-684-3110. Talking about the Supreme Court. Let's narrow down, it looks like, to Amy Barrett, Judge Barrett, Judge Kavanaugh, Judge Kethledge. I'm not giving any particular order of the president will own that pick. When I say own the pick, at the end of the day, as I said in the earlier segment, and I'm going to go to Andy Economo on this, the fact of the matter, this is how it works. There's a lot of advice that comes in through the White House Counsel's Office, through the Department of Justice, through groups like the Federalist Society, through groups like Heritage, from groups like ours, others. But the decision is not the White House Counsel's. The decision is not the Heritage Foundation or Jay Sekulow's or the Federalist Society. The decision ends up being the President of the United States. That's what the Constitution sets forth, Andy, as to what the role of the President is to nominate and appoint judges on the Supreme Court. And they actually use the word judges, not justices, but go
ahead.
That's
right. That's correct. This is a uniquely presidential appointment. It is within the unique province of the chief executive. In this case, President Trump will make that decision. He may get advice from multiple sources. I'm sure he is. Probably more sources than he wants to hear from. But he's ultimately going to make that decision and transmit that nominee to the Senate for action, and it is a presidential appointment of the highest and most important nature because of the effect that it has, especially these young people, in comparison to me, that he's appointing, who will be there 20, 30 years.
Yeah, 30 or 40 years, maybe. Harry, when you look in the constitutional constellation here of authority of the president and the role of the president, and when you get to the appointment of the Supreme Court justices, it's about as high as it gets.
Absolutely. And basically, the appointment of a Supreme Court justice is the enduring legacy of a president. But given the level of polarization out there, all of our listeners need to buckle up and prepare for a fight once the president exercises his constitutional prerogative to select a nominee.
Yeah, there's going to be, I mean, Jordan, there's no question there's going to be a fight.
Oh, absolutely, it's a fight. I mean, these hearings will be as nasty as any hearing, depending on what, regardless if there's a filibuster, no filibuster anymore. It's going to be nasty. We've already seen previews of this, even in circuit court nomination battles. I will tell you, I mean, Neil Gorsuch did an excellent job through his confirmation hearing. That being said, it was a different seat, and this is, again, this is the seat left by Justice Kennedy. It was a seat that liberals and the Democrats always thought they, with him, they at least had a shot with when they brought cases to the Supreme Court, and they feel like with one of these nominees, they may be, you know, maybe they had a 30% shot with him, and they're probably going to get, you know, a 10% or less shot with whoever President Trump nominates. So I think they're going to be very aggressive. And let's not forget the politics of personal destruction. We forget that sometimes because it's been a long time since Clarence Thomas and those kind of battles. But always remember, they are not just digging into their judicial philosophy right now. They are digging into everything these people have ever done in their entire lives and everybody and their family members that have done in their entire lives to personally embarrass them, to do anything possible to even get them to withdraw.
Yeah. So NARAL's president said that we stand with the majority of Americans with respect to reproductive freedom. We will take our fight to all 100 senators, all 50 states. People are ready to fight. They know nothing less than the soul of our country is at stake. CeCe, I asked you this during the break, but that's NARAL's, and I'll ask Stan this in a moment. It'll tell us that's going to be a real fight here. But this is clearly the pro-abortion groups are active on this because Justice Kennedy ended up being the deciding vote to reaffirm Roe versus Wade in the Casey versus Planned Parenthood cases.
Yeah, the NARAL will always battle, pro-abortionists will always battle. They fight hard and they will not stop. But the one thing that she, misstates is it's not a majority anymore. Gallup just came out with a poll just last month that it's 37% of 18 to 29-year-olds believe in unrestricted abortion. And when you go higher, it goes to 30 and 25%. So it's not a majority of Americans that believe in unrestricted abortion.
Yeah, but you're going to be facing them toe-to-toe, Fan, in just a few, Tuesday of next week, right?
Yeah, Right. It's going to be intense, Jay. I would just point this out. NARAL might be not be paying attention to the polls or to the science on this, both of which are passing them by. But they're certainly in the ears of these members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. I mean, I just want to give you a couple of names, Jay. The top three Senate Democrats on this committee are Dianne Feinstein, Dick Durbin, and Patrick Leahy, two of which were the ones that attacked Amy Barrett when she was before them on her religious faith. Jay, the two most junior members are Kamala Harris and Cory Booker, both of which are already vying to run against President Trump in the next cycle. So you are going to get a very radical perspective during the course of these hearings. You're not going to hear from any of the Senate Democrats that are likely to garner this a vote for this nominee. You're going to hear the far left on abortion and every other issue
and
as well.
One thing I love about that is you can take that and run those ads against all those quote moderate Democrats running for re-election in the midterms who are in the same party as these radical leftists like Kamala Harris and Cory Booker, who are looking to be the opponents to President Trump, and run and say, see, this is the party they're part of, this is the people they represent, this is who they vote for and with. So I mean, I think a lot of this, Democrats are playing with fire with this nomination. They really are. And again, this is a good call coming in, I think, because about just kind of the whole list in general and picking through and how you do this process call. Chris in Nevada on line three. Chris, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Chris.
Hi. Is President Trump going to pick the best judge available or a good judge that's likely to be confirmed?
Okay, so that's a very important question. So if I look at the list of 25, Harry, I look at the list, and now that we think are the finalists, that every one of these judges are well qualified as far as their judicial philosophy, judicial temperament, and the way they view the Constitution.
Absolutely. So the team has looked at all three of these individuals, and there is a very solid basis for concluding that all three are well qualified. They know how to read the text of the Constitution. They know what the rule of law actually means. And they do not view their position as judges as a political platform. The left has depended increasingly upon the Supreme Court to grant new rights beyond the text of the Constitution. If you go back to the Griswold case and the privacy cases, there is no privacy language in the Constitution. But yet the Supreme Court found penumbras emanating from the text, and much of this is pure fiction.
But at the end of the day, to go back to what you said, Andy, earlier, this is uniquely a decision made with the advice and consent. So the Senate has a role here. They get to vote. But the president is the one that actually makes the nomination.
The president makes the pick. And I agree with Harry totally when they fabricate things. I remember in law school reading Griswold v. Connecticut, written by the infamous liberal Justice William O. Douglas, who fabricated out of nothing these rights that do not exist in the Constitution. Let us hope that President Trump's nominees do not sit and write historical fiction, but actually interpret the Constitution word for word, text by text, as it was written.
All right, we're here for another 30 minutes. If you don't get the full hour of the broadcast, what you need to do is go over to ACLJ.org. You can get the audio or the video version, the full TV version, there. Of course, Facebook and Periscope, we're broadcasting live to you right now, as well on other social media platforms. So there's a lot of ways for you to get this, including you can get it on our ACLJ app. There's a lot of ways to get it. We encourage you to do that. Also, don't forget, we're here for another 30 minutes, and we'll take your calls at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. Let me also encourage you to support the work of the American Center for Law and Justice. We're talking about the Supreme Court. We just filed just 2 days ago a petition for a writ of certiorari to the Supreme Court of the United States on a free speech case involving speech in the environment of college campuses. We'll talk about that when we come back from the break.
The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at ACLJ.org.
We will fight.
awesome. Well, the President of the United States is the one who actually makes the pick to become a Supreme Court justice. There's input from the White House Counsel's Office, of course. The Department of Justice has input on it as well. There's outside groups, Heritage Foundation, Federalist Society, groups like ours. But at the end of the day, let me tell you something. It's not the decision of Jay Sekulow. It's not the decision of the Federalist Society. It's not the decision of Heritage. It's not the decision of the White House Counsel. It's the decision of the President of the United States. Reports are that there are three finalists. Judge Amy Barrett of the Seventh Circuit, Judge Brett Kavanaugh of the D.C. Circuit, and Judge Raymond Kethledge of the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. All of them fitting a particular judicial philosophy. How would you... Harry Hutchinson, our director of policy, how would you define that? If you were going to look at the overarching judicial philosophy of all 25 of the people that are on this list, but also understanding that even people with similar judicial philosophies, as Jordan said, could come to different conclusions, how would you describe their judicial philosophy overall? You've looked at a lot of the judges' writings.
Well, first, Jay, I'm looking for a judge who is prepared to actually read the text of the Constitution. You and I might have a quibble here or there over a particular word or a particular phrase, but we would make an honest effort to read the Constitution itself. Secondly, we would put aside our own policy preferences. In other words, a judge should not seek to legislate from the bench. And so if we look at the three leading candidates, according to press reports, all three of those individuals are prepared to put aside their own personal policy preferences and read the Constitution itself.
Yeah.
That's what we're looking for, and I think that is what the president is looking for as well.
All right, we are taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110, but I want to, before we get to calls, I want to talk about what Harry just said, and that is judicial philosophy. Look, the judge calls balls and strikes. I mean, that's what judges do. We want to know how they viewed the Constitution. What is their view of the role of judge? What you don't want is, we call it an activist court. I would think that the fact of the matter is that the other side will say these judges are activists. We'll say their judges are activists. But it's really defining who the judge is and what their judicial philosophy is.
Yeah, that's right. And it's also, and then it's the performance part of this too. I mean, when you're sitting down with the president, when they're doing these interviews with the president, yes, the president is looking at, okay, listen, when you're with the president of the United States, is a very powerful person, intense. Imagine these people on the Judiciary Committee and the 11 the members of that. And then you see these are all people that would like to be president of the United States going after you with question after question after question. Yep. You've got to be extremely good under pressure. Some of these people, it's been a long time since they've gone through a confirmation process. Yep. Others, it's been months. I think in Amy Barrett's case, it's been less than a year. But you know, for some of them, it's been many years since they were on the other side of the bench, if you will, being the ones having under the pressure answering the questions from those who are, you know, half of them are coming at you with extremely hostile questions.
Yeah. No, it's an intense environment. And part of it is the personal chemistry that they have with the members of the Senate Judiciary Committee and also how they do in the interview. The interview process for the president is significant. The president gets to ask questions. You know, this idea that you don't get to ask questions, and the president said, I'm not asking how they're going to rule in Roe versus Wade, although you would think, CeCe, that is the only topic that is on the mind of those left of center.
Absolutely, because, again, we're letting the enemy define the argument. And that's not the argument. What we need to know is, how are these judges going to rule on cases based on the Constitution? Will they follow the Constitution? It's not an issue.
Yep.
It's not a political. It's the Constitution.
Andy, really quickly here, you and I have been before a lot of judges. When we look at judicial temperament, yes, that's another issue.
It's very much an issue, and temperament means being able to look at something in a dispassionate way, in an objective way, not imposing, as you said, your personal policies and your personal preferences, but reading the text of a statute, of a law, and in this case, the Constitution.
And Than, to you, you believe that these three or anybody else that would be on this list would be confirmed?
I do. You know, politics plays a role when it comes to the United States Senate, Jay, but all of the political winds blow in the direction of the president. So I think any of these nominees, especially since they've been out there for so long, I think they're going to be confirmed, Jay.
And confirmed before the first Monday in October when the Supreme Court sits?
I do believe so, yes.
All right, we'll come back. We'll take your calls. 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110.
The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. As you know, Pastor Andrew is facing charges of, quote, Christianization, on trial for simply living out his Christian faith. He could spend the rest of his life in a Turkish prison. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're aggressively advocating for Pastor Andrew's freedom. We've mobilized our international offices. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved, and we've submitted a critical legal document to the United Nations. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
All right, we're going to go right back to the phones. 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. Who do we have next?
Yeah, Jerry calling in from Rhode Island on line 4. Jerry, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hey, Jerry.
Good morning to the panel.
Yes.
Fan hit it right on the head. As far as the lion's share of the president's base voted for him because of this very reason. Before the election, we all knew anywhere from 2 to potentially 4 justices by 2024 could be replaced. And we all know it's going to be a battle, Kamala Harris, Booker. But the president, as a successful businessman, surrounded him with smart people to do business. But when he came into office, he surrounded himself with the best people he could for each area, whether it be the defense, like Secretary Mattis, or foreign policy, like Mr. Bolton and Pompeo, and the economic people. I don't remember their names.
Larry
I'm
Kudlow.
Sure he's going to surround himself with the right people as a group to give him good counsel on who to pick.
Right.
And knowing the battle that's coming, like what happened to Justice Thomas and Justice Gorsuch. I mean, any of these candidates, just go back and look at the film. That's the battle you're
coming
in.
Look, you're absolutely right, Jerry. It's going to be a fight. The president is the one that makes the decision. He's got great advice coming from his White House counsel, Don McGahn. He's got great advice, I'm sure, coming from the Justice Department. Great advice coming from groups like I said, the Federalist Society and the Heritage Foundation and others. But at the end of the day, as I said, it's not Don McGahn's decision. It's not Jay Sekulow's decision. It's not the vice president's decision. It is Donald Trump, the president of the United States, decision on who serves at the Supreme Court.
And I would say I've worked for a few presidential candidates. There is not one of them I would ever imagine, nor would they ever give any indication that they would ever put out a list like President Trump did to where basically any one of his supporters, any one of his detractors have had plenty of time, if you are so inclined and so interested and care about this issue, to look through this list. I mean, it's not a list of 200 names. It's 25 to go through. You can do quick Google searches on people. You don't have to be a lawyer to look through just the kind of the basics of it to find out who these people are. It's unprecedented. I think it goes to that caller's point because he did not come from the political process. He wanted to make it clear to the American people, I'm trusting those who are the most involved in this issue to help me put together this list. I will make the final decision, but they have assisted me. And he's not been shy about that, about the assistance he's gotten. He is not a president who is afraid of saying he receives the assistant, but he always makes clear, you know, he makes that final
call. I mean, here's the thing also, and I know people are thinking this. That's great, but we know that sometimes, Harry, the justices that get the individual judges that get nominated when they get on the Supreme Court, it doesn't come out exactly like you thought. Yep. There's a historic precedent for that, both on Republicans and Democrats.
Absolutely. And so here, the president, I think, is rightly relying on, for lack of a better term, an extreme vetting process led by the Federalist Society. And so all of these potential nominees are well known to the leaders of the Federalist Society. In addition, the president has hired an advisor with a specific focus on nominating judges, both for the Supreme Court and at the appellate and district court level.
And the White House counsel's office is heavily involved, and the Department of Justice has an area that focuses on judges. So there's a lot of expertise coming into this.
And so the President Trump has a large amount of information upon which he can rely, and much of that information, all of that information, I think, is very, very solid. And at the end of the day, I think he will select a solid nominee.
So Sarah on Periscope writes, I've been very impressed with the president's leadership. He's brilliant. That here's the and the follow-up on it is, so how does that relate then to the Supreme Court, Andy? A pick like of this magnitude.
Well, I mean, the man is brilliant in many respects. When it comes to judging people and individuals, look at who he appointed as the new Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo. What an excellent appointment that was. In other words, he's got to use his judgment and his discretion. But what's important about the Supreme Court is it's so long. It's during good behavior, which has been interpreted to mean for life. And generations are going to be affected by who the president appoints to fill Justice Kennedy's position.
All right, let's go right to the phones. Mark in Missouri on line one. Mark, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi. Hey, Mark. Hi, guys. Listen, I just had a quick question. I just wondered that if President Trump nominates a justice, let's say Barrett, for example, and she gets denied by the Senate, then after the fall election, basically he would be presenting another nominee to a different Senate. So could he nominate Justice Barrett again, or would he be obligated to nominate somebody else?
Well, he's not obligated to nominate someone else, but you don't want to go into it then that way. I mean, you got to go into it to win. I mean, you put the nominee up to win.
That's right, Jay. But Mark's question is why I have so much confidence, because so many of these senators who are going to be the swing votes on this do have to go back to their voters in states that Donald Trump won. I mean, 10 Senate Democrats have to go back to the voters in states that Donald Trump won and tell their voters why they did or did not support the president's nominee. So, look, I don't think it's going to come to this. I think this nominee is going to be sitting on the Supreme Court come October 1. However, if that didn't happen, the president could come back after the elections with the same exact nominee. And if he did that, Jay, I'll bet he would be doing it with a much greater number of Republicans, because those Democrats that oppose that nominee in places like North Dakota and Missouri and Indiana, I don't think they would be back, Jay.
But that would give us eight judges on the Supreme Court when you come back in the first Monday in October. And I never lie. Someone that litigates before the Supreme Court and that for three decades. You don't like an eight. You want a nine. That's just kind of how it works. All right, we're taking calls. 1-800-684-3.
Yeah, I think this is a great one from Sherry in Arizona online, too. Sherry, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Thank you. And Van, from your mouth to God's ears, that's what I pray for. But here's my question. How many times during these judicial hearings where they do accept or decline these judges, do Democrats ask constitutional questions? Will you hold up the Constitution?
Go ahead.
I mean, I think we'd have to go back in the archives. They may ask it in a backhanded way in their view of the Constitution, because, of course, they believe, for instance, that abortion is a constitutionally protected right. So their view of what upholding the Constitution means is very different than what it means to interpret the Constitution. And so for them, upholding the Constitution is upholding every decision they've liked by the Supreme Court and going against every decision they haven't liked by the Supreme Court. So, for instance, they don't like the voting rights decisions by the Supreme Court recently. So they would say, oh, that's not constitutional.
They love Roe versus Wade, and again, Planned Parenthood versus Casey. That's constitutional. So they just have a very different view of what is and what isn't constitutional. And the conservatives, and what you'll see in the question is, they have a pretty straightforward view of what it means to interpret the Constitution.
Go ahead, Cece.
Well, I was just going to say that they actually asked the Roe v. Wade question, is will you follow Supreme Court precedent on Roe v. Wade? Because I don't think they even think that that is a constitutional right. So they ask, I think, questions more on precedent more than they ask, will you follow the text of the Constitution?
Well, here's what Dick Durbin said, a Democrat member of the United States Senate.
I can't tell you how many nominees have been before us in this panel for the bench, and virtually all say the same. I'm following the precedent. I'm following the law. I'm following the Constitution. Don't worry a thing about who I am, how I was raised, what my religion is, what my life experiences have been. Put it all aside. I don't believe that for a second. I don't think cases reach your level, at circuit level, that are that clear. Maybe some are, but few. You're really called on to judge cases that are a close call.
You know, Andy, Durbin says in this, I'm following the Constitution. Don't worry about who I am, how I was raised, what my religion is, what my life experience have been. Put it all aside. I don't believe that for a second.
Well, that's Dick Durbin, who attacked Judge Barrett along with Senator Feinstein because she was a Catholic, imposing a religious test which the Constitution prohibits. So I don't believe anything Dick Durbin says or what he purports to allege his belief is.
So, Fan, if Amy Barrett was the nominee, are they going to go through that religion line again and trying to almost belittle her faith? Because that didn't work out so well for the Democrats last time.
Well, I think Dianne Feinstein and Dick Durbin regret having done that in the first place because it elevated Amy Barrett's profile. But, Jay, look, they're already telegraphing where they're going to be. I think on the Senate Judiciary Committee, that is largely what you will hear because this is the far left of the Democrat Party. But, Jay, I would be much more interested what the senator from the state of Montana, where the president is going tonight, John Tester, has to say than I am Dick Durbin. Because guess what? Dick Durbin's vote is irrelevant in this process, but the vote of John Tester in Montana, that might make a difference. And
what's
I'll
Tester
going
to do? What do you think?
I don't know. He voted against Barrett the first time around, but he is in play. And if he wants to keep that Senate seat in Montana, I think he would have to be a yes on this nominee. Otherwise, I don't think he'll be back next term.
I mean, Supreme Court nominees are very different than circuit court nominees. Their confirmation hearings are very different. I think Amy Barrett's circuit court nomination was more similar to like a Supreme Court one, but this will be even, 10 times more extreme and tough than even that.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're taking your calls. Last segment of the broadcast, 1-800-684-3110. 800-684-3110 to urge you to make the call. Don't forget, support the work of the ACLJ at ACLJ.org. And coming up, for those of you watching on Facebook or Periscope, a little music for you that we performed on July 4th. So we got a little tune coming up for you. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. As you know, Pastor Andrew is facing charges of, quote, Christianization, on trial for simply living out his Christian faith. He could spend the rest of his life in a Turkish prison. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're aggressively advocating for Pastor Andrew's freedom. We've mobilized our international offices. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved, and we've submitted a critical legal document to the United Nations. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at aclj.org.
That the three finalists, and you never know because things change in the last 24 hours on these. I've been there, trust me, a lot can change in the last 24 to 48 hours. But right now, it looks like it's Judge Brett Kavanaugh, Judge Amy Barrett, or Judge Raymond Ketledge. So those are the three that appear to be the finalists. That doesn't mean they are the finalists and doesn't mean that the president hasn't already made up his decision. But again, as I said, things can change right at the end. All right, we're going right to our phones. It is the last segments. 1-800-684-3110 is the number. 800-684-3110. Right to the phones, Jordan.
Yep, Terry in Maryland on line three. Terry, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Terry.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My question is, if President Trump chooses Amy Barrett.
Yep.
She's already been through all this confirmation only 5 months ago. First of all, what more could they ask her? And number two, for the ones who who already voted, you know, yes for her, I mean, if they were to turn around and vote no now, I mean, that I don't think that would look very well.
They justify that, though, by saying that was for the Court of Appeals and this is for the Supreme Court.
Yeah, I mean, there's a big difference between a circuit court nominee. I mean, there's hundreds of those. They go into three-judge panels. They hear things then en banc when you've got, you know, a number of judges. And the left, honestly, dominates most of the circuit courts for the most part, depending on what panel you get, but chosen. But when it comes to the Supreme Court, the left, that's the one last bastion where the left does not dominate. And because of that, I can easily actually see even like a Susan Collins or a Lisa Murkowski switching their vote on someone like that, which means you'd have to rely on finding a couple of a more moderate Democrats who actually may be more conservative than those two Republicans because of the states they represent.
Harry, what do you think?
Well, I think Jordan is absolutely correct. First, the stakes are so much higher here. Secondly, I suspect the left will also dig more deeply into the personal details surrounding a potential nominee. And thirdly, the left will actually throw more falsehoods against the wall and hope some of them stick.
Yeah.
So, for instance, Amy Barrett has been called an individual who supports separate but equal. Now, that was a false charge, and it was subsequently deleted, but it came from, for instance, the NAACP.
But they turned it around and said that was not – they acknowledged that it was an error, correct?
Absolutely. In addition, Demand for Justice has launched a $5 million campaign. So there will be more money in play, more claims in play. The nominee will indeed be labeled an extremist. And the hope is certain senators will be swayed by that at the end of the day.
So let me ask you to understand. People need to understand these are going to be this is almost like multi. They're not like they are multi-million dollar campaigns.
Oh, no question about it. There will be tens of millions of dollars poured into these races all across the country in specific Senate races and here on Capitol Hill lobbying for votes. I would just follow up real quickly with this. I think President Trump has done a remarkable job on both the Neil Gorsuch nomination and the Amy Barrett nomination. Not a single Republican senator dissented from those votes. And on the Barrett vote, Jay, Joe Donnelly, Tim Kaine, and Joe Manchin all voted for her. I could see Tim Kaine changing his vote on a Supreme Court nominee. It's going to be very difficult for Joe Donnelly or Joe Manchin to switch their vote and then go back to the voter. So that is an important precedent as far as Senate votes go to look at, I think.
Evelyn is calling in from Tennessee on line five. Evelyn, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Evelyn.
Hello. I was just listening, and just from watching the politics in general, I don't think it matters who Trump chooses. I think even if it was someone that the Democrats had suggested, I think it would be a fight and shot down because Trump suggested it, for one. And two, we want someone in there that's going to uphold the Constitution.
Right.
And we've seen many Democrats aren't real fond of parts of the Constitution. So I think there's going to be another issue.
So I think here's what I was going to ask this to Andy. So because Evelyn raises a good point, and that is there anybody that the president could put up that's not going to get a visceral reaction from the left?
No, I mean, they hate him so much. The left, the radical left, despises the president with a vitriol that is just primeval, I mean, in its hatred toward him. And he could put, you know, he could go back and resurrect Merrick Garland, who Obama, the community organizer, had nominated. And they'll say, well, there's something wrong with him. If it emanates from President Trump, the left is going to hate it, whoever the nominee is.
And the Judiciary Committee is full. I mean, Dan could speak to this, full of some of the nastiest, toughest Democrats. I mean, when it comes to rhetoric. And throwing out falsehoods, like we didn't bring this up yet, but like Kamala Harris, who was on that Judiciary Committee, who tweeted yesterday, we talked about some of these July 4th tweets, that 8 immigrants signed the Declaration of Independence. Of course, this is going to the immigration battle happening on the southern border. So we looked into this. 56 people signed the Constitution, right?
Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, the Declaration of Independence. The eight that she's talking about were from England. Two were from Ireland, two were from Scotland, one was from Northern Ireland, and one was from Wales. These were all, of course, people who signed the Declaration of Independence before there was a United States of America, all emanating from the colonies and the country that was controlling the colonies. So, again, they will throw these falsehoods out.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like what the NAACP did. You throw the falsehood out, and that sticks a lot more than the retraction.
All right. Yeah. Let's go and take another call.
Yeah. Let's go to Ronaldo in New York on line four. Ronaldo, welcome to JSecio Live.
Hi, Ronaldo.
Thank you ever so much, you guys, for your ministry.
Thank you.
For standing and being a watchman on the wall. And I just want to say that we can easily document that this is going to be very biased. That when a Democrat has been appointed, it's been smooth sailing. No one is, you know, it's going to treat them or has treated them like they're going to be, you know, treating this new appointee, you know, that Donald Trump. It just like they treat Donald Trump, I believe. I'm anticipating that they're going to do, they're going to treat this person. And I remember that in the past, they said that you cannot legislate morality, but all along they've been legislating immorality.
Of course. It's whose view of morality are they legislating? And I'm going to throw this to Cece because the fact of the matter is, they're all legislating morality in that sense. I mean, they take their worldview there. And the fact is that I think what you're saying, though, is also correct. And that is, look, this is when you're talking about a Supreme Court fight next to the presidency of the United States, I think it's the biggest political battle we have in the United States.
It is because the ridiculous thing is it's their personal opinion. It's their personal politics that play into this. But they're the first then to condemn, you know, any of these nominees having a personal opinion, which they've all said they wouldn't have their personal opinions influence their rulings. But the left, it's all personal opinion and their political positions.
All right, that's going to do it for our broadcast today. So the great question that I'm going to ask Jordan and Than, and that is, because we started the program this way, Than, does the nominee get through?
I do think so, Jay, and I say before the Supreme Court sits. In fact, I'll even give you a date range. I'll say September 17th or September 18th are the dates that nominee will be confirmed.
Yeah, I always say I believe they'll be confirmed unless there's some personal issue we don't know about that would lead to a withdrawal. That would be the only reason why it would not have anything to do with politics, would not have anything to do with the Senate Democrats' votes. It would just be some personal issue that arose that we may not know about, and the nominee themselves may not know about. It could be a health issue or something like that that happens. Other than that, yes, whoever is selected by the president will be confirmed.
All right, that does it for the broadcast today. Don't forget ACLJ's matching challenge at ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. We'll talk to you tomorrow. More developments, I'm sure, on the Supreme Court front as we get ready for the announcement on Monday. Back with more tomorrow.
The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at ACLJ.org.